I'm JP LaFond. This is CS76, the first of the iOS seminars. This one's on interface builders, multi-tab app design, and playing with table views. The first thing we're going to show has absolutely nothing to do with those, however, because a couple people asked, how do you do pinches and whatnot in the simulator? So I'm just going to go over that a little quickly because we glossed over that a bit in class on Tuesday. All right, here is the transitions app that David put up on Thursday. Let me embiggen this a little bit so that we can see. All right, if you want to do a pinch with the simulator, you hold down the Option key, which is the one right next to the Apple or Butterfly key on the keyboard. And that shows you the two pinch symbols on the simulator, and then you can move closer to pinch or farther out to expand. I just wanted to make sure that people learned how to do that, because there might be people in class that are using these gestures in their student choice project and don't have a device to play with. Any other questions? All right, we're going to start. All right, now the transitions program goes away, as does the keyboard. All right. The interface builder makes it very easy to design interfaces, but there's some issues that can come up, and we're just going to go over them quickly. In class or in the seminar, the sample code is the hapless series, and this is a simple enough program. It's got an app delegate and a view controller and a nib file. And within our nib file, we have a couple text fields, a couple of buttons, everything's easy peasy. The first thing we're going to do is disconnect everything. To show what happens when things aren't connected. David illustrated this briefly in class on Tuesday. And we'll just go through it again to walk through the ways on how to fix these things. This is, if anyone cares, this is based off of the simple view controller template that is available through the Xcode. And the first thing that happens, let's bring up the is we get a whole bunch of errors, which makes sense because when you look at the error, it pretty much explains right away what the problem is. Tried to load the nib, but the view outlet wasn't set. So the first thing to do when you see something like this is take a look at your nib file and see whether you've got anything set. Unsurprisingly, there was no view set. So you just connect it. You're all everything's all well and good. One of the problems that we just saw is you can connect these things incorrectly, and you'll get absolute garbage when you try to run it. In this case, stop it. What we should get, if I remember correctly, is a blank screen after the initial splash page. And the reason for that is the view controller is actually not the view controller. It's the view controller for the button. So you just... And it's just a simple matter of reconnecting everything. So the view should go to the view itself. And then you can connect your buttons. When in doubt, use meaningful variable names, which will help with this. Thank you. And then all we have to do now is sit back and run it. Oops. And everything works well and good. If we take a look, we can see that the submit button, there's an NSLog in the submit class that will give us various data. Everything's all well and good, but there's also an error in this built into this code that will cause it to crash in case of pressing the cancel button. So let's illustrate that. Let's begin this. Go to the simulator. And, you know, it crashes. And if you take a look at the code, it's pretty clear what's going on. And the reason that this crashes, it's pretty self-explanatory. We have an NSLog. We give it a format to expect an argument, and we don't give it an argument. The nice thing is under Xcode 4, it flags it with a warning, which gives you a heads up of what could happen, rather than just crashing and giving you no clue which it used to do. So the two examples that I gave under the hapless code, the first one is working except for this bug, and the second one shows what happens if you incorrectly set up the view controllers. So those are the big problems with interface builder issues are connecting things incorrectly, forgetting to connect things, and the messages that you get in your log file. 9 times out of 10 will tell you what's going on. The biggest one that I'm sure people have seen with their Evil Hangman project is putting something into your nib file and then forgetting to connect. You know, whether it's a controller, using David's example of a secondary controller to control button presses and whatnot, or something else. The next thing we're going to go over is multi-tabs, and we'll just get to that shortly. This basically flows from doing a new tab example. We'll walk through what that looks like, and then we'll jump to, as David puts it, the already baked example. So we use a tab bar application. Nothing's where it's supposed to be. And what this gives you is it gives you one view controller, a secondary view controller, and if we look at the nib file, we have a tab bar controller and different components built in. The first thing we're going to look at is, all right, there's lots of stuff here. What does it all mean? As you saw from other things, the window is self-explanatory. The tab bar controller, let me move this up so that we can see it, is the tab bar controller is basically this area here. It has multiple tab bar items. And each tab bar item is tied to a nib file and a view controller. And we'll take a look at a little bit closer. So there's the tab bar itself, which is, Sorry, let me zoom out so you can see it. There's the tab bar itself, which is just this whole bottom bar. And then there's multiple view controllers. And when we look on the right, the tab bar, each view controller obviously has a class. It also has a nib name. And this is the nib file of which the view controller expands from to give you the whatever widgets you might have on that, you know, in that view. And when you know that everything's connected correctly, when you look, and here it'll say, this is the view, this is the nib file that it's loaded from. And the tab bar items also can have an image as well as a name. So let's unpack that a little bit. And
basic question.
Yeah, of course.
Seems like it doesn't matter how things are lined up on the graph paper. I worry about these views not completely.
It matters in how things are on a view, but moving the views on the graph paper doesn't matter as far as I can tell. I tend to move them around a little bit, mostly so that I can get to things and see things easily. In this example, as we're going to see shortly, there's multiple views which will pop up at different times. Whether you've got them all stacked up, so that you can't see another one when one's in the front, or whether you've got them all scattered next to each other to make it a little easier for you to navigate through them, it really doesn't matter. So then you've got the tab bar item, which is, you know, just like I said, the possible image and the name. And we look over here, you know, you've got items that you can set. So let's jump out of the pre-baked one and jump to the one that I put a little bit more data in. And here we've got three different, let me begin this a little bit. We've got three view controllers, each handily labeled text entry, color picker, and results. Unsurprisingly, the first one will be a text entry screen, the second will be a UI picker screen, and the third one will be the results thereof. I think the easiest thing to do is show you it in example. And the first, you know, two text fields, a first name and a last name, a clear and a save button, nothing too, you know, too difficult. One important thing, though, is even though I've put the data here on the first screen, the third screen shows the results. And as you've seen with your Evil Hangman project, passing data between views is something that you're going to need to do for almost any application. But what you also want to make sure happens is that when you make a change, it's reflected in the result, you know, in your final results. And the way we did this is, let's take a look at our results file. The way we did this is we used viewDidAppear. And what viewDidAppear does is this gets called every time the view shows back up from being hidden. If we had used viewDidLoad, it would only have been updated the first time that view was called. And we're gonna right now what we're gonna do is gonna put in a couple of log statements so you can you can see what I'm trying to illustrate. So we'll ignore the singleton initted for the moment because, all right, so we go to results. View, make this a little bit bigger so you can see. View did load, showed up once, followed by view did appear. When we go to a different view screen and then back, only view did appear comes back. This is especially important if you want data to refresh, to reflect changes, that it's important that you call view did appear. Just so that it will show up every time the view appears. The other stuff that we did in this code is there's two things. One is we used a helper function. Nothing too big out of that. David went over that in class. The other thing we used is a singleton to store the data between views. On the forums, David gave us an example for some singleton code that included zone copy, etc. I didn't need a lot of that, so I trimmed it down to just what I need. It's not fully what Apple recommends you used, but it works for this example. I just want to make sure that was clear to people in case they're using a property with a copy rather than a retain, in which case you'd need to implement the code that Apple recommends that has the copy zones, etc. And the code is pretty straightforward. There's a static instance variable. And on init, calling the shared instance, it initializes the shared instance variable in the case that it hasn't been allocated. And it's used in your code. We'll hop over to the text example. We call the singleton, we call the shared instance, and then once we have that instance, we can call any of the method variables to set, to set things. In this case, we've got two name fields, which we put together to create one name field because the results only cares about one of them. It's pretty straightforward. It's pretty simple to use, and I think this will be. I think this might be prove useful for a lot of people for their student project. The next thing I want to show you is taking this code and using the NS user default that's recommended to use for the Evil Hangman project. There's some limitations to that. In this case, we use a helper field, the color helper class that I created, and we store the results of this in our shared object. using NS user defaults doesn't work with your helper fields, as we'll illustrate in the second iteration of this. Did you have a question? Oh. Oops. Now, in this example, it's largely the same code. But in... All right. Instead of using the singleton, we use the NS user defaults, and we set our color objects. And watch what happens when we try to save this object. We get a... sorry, the screen's only so big. We get an error message because we're trying to set a non-property object within the NS user defaults. It can only handle the standard Apple property values, such as NS number, NS arrays that only hold property values, as well as the, you know, obviously NS string. So if you're using helper classes, storing the defaults, storing the, you know, sharing information between views using the user defaults might not be the best way to go, which is why I recommend, you know, singletons for sharing values. But while we're here, I want to go over the information that one needs to use a picker value, because some people might be using that in their student projects. The color picker is illustrating what a picker looks like. This is, it's basically just, you know, you've seen them in various applications for choosing dates or choosing from a series of choices, as we have here. In my code, we basically, you know, just walk through. It's pretty simple. You set up a normal view controller. You have to say that you're going to be implementing the data source and the delegate for the picker view. You have a picker view. In this case, I also have an array that will be used to populate the picker, much the same way as when you're using a table view controller. You're going to have to control a certain number of things, such as the number of columns, the number of rows, you know, what goes into each of these rows, et cetera, et cetera. And when we look at the implementation file, it's pretty short. We basically, let me begin this. We have some property values, a picker and an array. We've got the standard view controllers, you know, view did load, should auto rotate, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The two new ones are the UI picker view data source, which, you know, there's a number of things that we could implement. We've only implemented a small subset. The number of components, in this case, obviously one. The number of rows, and we'll go through that. And then the view delegate only cares about one thing. One, what are we going to show for each of these rows? And what do we do when someone selects one? And we'll just go through this quickly. View did load uses the helper functions to create an array of color helper objects, each with, you know, a color, and UI color is a standard Apple class of colors, and there's a number of colors that are prefabbed within them. I basically went through the standard Roy G. Biv and created a color array. Then we take a look, we jump down to the ViewPicker data source. And like I said, we only worry about one component, we put in one component. For rows, we use the number of rows within our array. And then for the turning the title of the array, our helper class has two options: the number of the color itself and the name of that color. So we just basically take the name of the color and put it up. And when we select a row, we put up a log statement and try to store it into the shared user preferences. This fails, you know, because it, you know, can't handle it. And in our simulator instance, we see that the color is actually not going, not popping over. Because if it couldn't store it, obviously it can't pull up that data. And if you go back to the singleton example, yes. To the working singleton example, actually, let's. You see that it's got, you know, it pulls up a color based off of the color picker, because the singleton has no problem with storing helper classes because it was built into the singleton. All right, now we're going to jump into tables. Personally, I think tables are one of the more useful things, because they're not just for showing data. You can also do this to illustrate to anything that has additional rows happening behind the scenes, whether it looks it or not. It's actually a table. Anytime you have data that's going to show a number of, and you've also got the option of showing things in different ways, thanks to the magic of custom table cells, a table is as variable as you want it to be, and it's just that tables obviously can be used in so many different ways, which is why we're covering that today. Sorry.
Are these button sets or rows in your table?
In that example, those buttons don't really do anything, but buttons can be set up in the examples.
The way you arrange them on screen, is it like rows pattern, calls pattern in HTML. You can place three buttons in a row, and on top of it, description as a single cell.
Those rows actually were a single cell, I basically used Interface Builder, which I'll show you how to do today when we get to the custom table cells, that will allow you to put any of the controls in anything you want. I think in that particular example, there was a control cell. And there was a data cell, and the control cell has the buttons on the bottom, on the bottom row. So each time I have a section in the table view controller, which Tommy went over in class the other night.
In general, with these tables, can you create cells that will span rows or columns?
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. You can have tables have variable height. But you can't have it be, span more than the screen. It, because I think that's what you're, asking.
That's a different thing.
Okay.
It's, I'm asking, like, you can do in HTML, you can do a call span for a cell. So that your cell would occupy two columns, for example. And below it, there would be two cells adjacent to each other.
Oh, okay.
Can you do such thing with these tables?
James, I think the easiest way to say that is just that each cell is a custom, is a view itself. So you can lay out that view however you choose.
Okay, so I basically can embed a table into a table and achieve a similar result, right?
You wouldn't embed a table view inside of a table
view. Am I not able to do that?
Yeah, no. You can lay out your view pretty much however you would choose, but you can, I don't believe you can actually embed a UI table view inside of a table view.
All right. And this is probably going to be awful for those of you viewing from home, because yellow on white and bright green on white, not the best color choices. But this is a simple table using the same colors that we used in the picker example from the tab one. One of the things that you can control for table cells is the level of indentation. And you just basically set the indent level and it will go farther over to the right. But this is a pretty simple table. And this is table fun 001. It's just a simple table, and what we're going to do is each subsequent iteration of this code is adding a little bit more complexity to it. And when we look at the code, there we go. When we look at the code, it's pretty simple. We set up an array, we add objects to the array, which I'm probably shooting way too fast. We find out the number of items, so we know how many rows to put up in our section. And then for the cell itself, we pull out the data and shove it into the array. Nothing to earth-shaking. The one thing that's not in the sample code that's on the website is playing with the indent level, but this is in the documentation. A lot of the your best friend, if you're going to be doing anything with table cells, is iOS's table view programming guide. If you take a look at the README file that I've included in the the code samples, it's got the URL to the Apple developer page. That's got the URL for the table view programming guide. As with a lot of things, the Apple documentation is really fantastic. It's got lots of great examples for how to do stuff with tables, as well as step-by-step instructions in the programming guide, and far more detail than I think you'll ever need for some of the minute details for table programming. But let's go back to the examples. All right, in the second example, we start looking at custom table cells to give you a little bit more than you get. And let's take a look at how we did this. The first thing we did was we created a custom table cell. It's part of the UI table view cell. It's a child of the US UI table view cell. We in this example, we've got two labels. Let me show you exactly how one does this, because it's a little bit different than you might have done before. So you say new file Objective C class. Is this big enough, or does it need to be embiggened? You choose UI table view cell. And much like when you're creating a view controller, you just add what you want into it. It's out here. Don't forget to synthesize any properties that you're creating so that it doesn't blow up on compilation. Then you just have to create a nib file. And that's done by, again, file. New. In this case, rather than going to Cocoa Touch, you're going to go to User Interface. You're going to create an empty nib file. Okay, it starts with nothing. So you obviously have to drop something in. The first thing you're going to drop in is an object. And this will be set to be your, you will set it from your new table cell that you've just created. Then you're going to drop in a, where is it? A table view cell. And let me just embiggen that so people can see it. We just basically just grab the table view cell and just drop that onto your, you know, your graph paper. We really only need the one, so I'll get rid of the other one. And all right, why do I only have, oh, because it doesn't really delete. Okay, the first thing we're going to do is change the class. Then we're going to put in our objects. We know that there is a image view, so we drop one of those in. Slide it over a little bit. And we know there's a label, so we drop one of those in. The nice thing with a table cell is you can have it from any size that you want. It starts at the default, but you can have it as big or as, you know, well, largely big, because you don't want it to be much smaller than the default, because just from the size constraints to see anything on the device. And once you have them in there, it's just a simple matter of connecting things up. Oh, and here is another of the of the interface builder bugs that I, you know, I mentioned. Well, not less bugs, more usage errors that I outlined previous. As you can see, I'm not seeing any outlets, and the reason for that is I forgot to create outlets in the H file. Oops. Let me get rid of this so that you can actually see my code. So I set up the properties, but none of them are IB outlets. So they don't show up in an interface builder. Once they are, they show up. So I can connect my image, my label, and all will be right with the world. So that's how to do it from scratch. Oh, yep.
Is the cell fixed size? Do we set the size of the cell when we draw it?
You actually have to set the size in the program, and I'm gonna go over how to do that a little bit later in one of the examples. The question was about changing the sizes. And let's take a look at the code that is here. If you take a look at the custom cell, it uses the standard table view size. It's got two labels. One is, you know, for verbiage. One is a little block that, as you saw when it compiled, that controls, that is basically has a color. So, you know, nothing too worth shattering. And the important thing is how you use these programmatically, because this is slightly different than what we see in the standard examples, and we're going to go over that now. Root view controller. Let's get rid of this. All right. There we go. All right. In the standard code, we get this, which is this block of code here. It uses a UI table view cell with standard styles. Because we're using a custom table cell, we obviously can't do that. But what we can do is much in the same way that the code that we got from David and Tommy outlined how to load a view from a nib. You basically do the exact same thing for the table cell. You load it from a nib file. You pop it into the table view. You'll dequeue it the same way you would all normal cells, and then you configure it. Because it's a custom cell, you can't use the table view cell. You have to use your own class, which we do. And because we're using our own class, we've obviously got our own things in the class, which we set. And thanks to the magic of iOS, it works. And we've got, you know, the names of the colors, little rectangles of each color. But what's really useful is if you've got some sort of control widget. So we're going to put some switches on to turn things on and off. And that's what the next example does. So in this example, what we did was we extended the size of our table view cell, and we added a switch. We probably could have put it over here because there's all sorts of real estate over there, but the important thing was to change the cell height. And I didn't change the code at all. All I changed was what the what the cell nib file looks like. And as we see, that's going to be a problem. Because with all the speed of 6 gerbils, as you can see, there's some issues. Each of the cells are bigger, but the tabled view doesn't know that the cells are bigger than expected. So the next iteration fixes that. And if you take a look at the documentation, they illustrate the various functions that will fix this. All right. The function is called height for, where is it? Here it is. Height for row at index path. The way we found out this height was we looked at the height of our custom cells in a custom in the nib file, which I will show how to do. We go into the nib file under the size the inspector, we can see that the height is 80, which is what we plug into the program into the view controller, so that it knows how big these cells are. And there's nothing saying, as you can see from the view controller, you choose the height for each of the rows. So there's nothing saying that all the rows have to be identical height. That can all be handled programmatically. So, for example, if you've got an application much like the samples that I put up, where the heights are wildly different, it's a simple matter to change them. The only issue is that you have to know what the height is. You have to know what the heights are. So, if you've got data that you're putting into it that will have variable heights, you have to figure out how many lines are in that in that section and change the heights accordingly. It's a little harder with variable heights as opposed to using what I've done with custom cells that will always be a fixed height. You just have to choose the height based off of that cell, but it's certainly doable. And when you run this, it will look, much better, because it's not, each cell isn't stomping over visual data. But what it doesn't do is actually do anything. So the next examples will outline how to fix this. One of the things that we do is, and I'm sure there are better ways of doing it, this is one way that I found that works, is, let me pop to the top, is I hold a list of all the switches for each of the objects, and I programmatically add a listener to each of the switches that call my switch value changed, so that I have a listener for a state change. And when I'm what I do is I when I'm configuring the cell, I store the switches for each of the cell objects, and add the target so that I know that when the switch is switched, we do something. And when switch value changed is called, What it does is it logs it. It finds the row that the switch affects, and that's it. When the cell is shown, one of the things it does is make sure the switch is set to the value that it should be, either on or off, so that if I've set on, it stays on. If I've set off, it stays off. But more importantly, if the color block, if the switch is turned to off, the color block disappears. And we'll illustrate that by running it. All right. As we can see from the log at the bottom, we noticed we've done stuff. We've found the right row. We've flipped the switch, but nothing shows up on the screen. Except it sort of does. It's when that goes off the screen and back, it handles it correctly. So there's, you know, we're most of the way there, but there's a, you know, there's an issue. If only there was a way to reload the table. Happily, iOS gives us that. And that's the last example for the table fun. Now, when we flip the switch, everything goes off the way it's supposed to. Don't have to leave the screen. Life is good. And this is done by adding one line to switch value. Sadly, when it's too big, you can't see. What we call is table view reload data. So it basically goes through and behind the scenes, in the scenes because you're seeing it on the screen, it reloads all the data on the table based off of the changes. In this case, the switch will control whether the color square is shown or not. So that's what this does. There's another example which I don't think we're going to be able to get to. Actually, we've got a couple minutes. We had talked about modal view controllers a little bit in class. So I whipped up a quick little sample that shows the different transitions for modal view controllers. We've got the cover vertical, which just is a slide, the horizontal flip, the cross dissolve, and a partial curl. Nothing too crazy, but I just wanted to put that up there so people could see what all these things look like without having to take the examples that we had in section the other night and go through all the options from the documentation yourself. The only other thing it does is slap up a little alert window that you can put away. So that's about it. Does anybody have any questions?
Some of the table templates that they have seem to have functionality built into them, like the ability to add a row or delete a cell or move cells around.
Yes.
What's going on?
Well, Tommy's section went over that a little bit, so I didn't do too much into that. If you take a look at the table view programming guide, they basically talk about reordering things and. In the examples that I used, I had an array. If and the array figures out what goes into what row in the table based off of what's in where the table view illustrates the order things are in the array. So if you're using an immutable array, you can move things around, and I will put up. Probably tomorrow, a further example of taking the color example that we used in my table stuff to show moving moving rows, as well as deleting and adding rows for you. But it's pretty simple. They've got some great animation for removing a row where it'll pop out, or, you know, because one of the nice things with the iOS versus Android is a lot of the transitions and, you know, nice looking widgets is built right into the SDK, and it makes it a lot easier to look better than your program than your programming ability, as I found, as I think a lot of people find it, you know, the whiz bang factor is nicer with iOS. Does anybody else have any other questions? All right, thank you for your time, and here comes Bob with the next seminar. Seminar.